Here it is.
From deep inside your radio.
In this week's show, in 4 acts, the theme is attention. And
excuse me, I had a little NPR throat happening there. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, from London, England, this show, which normally has no theme except for now has a theme this week. Attention. Attention must be paid. Attention must be paid. You know that people get into show business to be noticed, to have attention paid, to have people, other people watch them, listen to them. Thank you very much. How are you? To notice them, to remember them, to love them, to like them, or to hate them. That's just the way it is. That's why we get into this business. Business. And hopefully, somewhere along the line, talent is an excuse for all that. Now, of course, we're in a new age where reality television has told people you can have that whole deal and you don't need the talent. So you can do anything and everything you want just to be noticed, and we'll notice you for a little while, and then we'll dump you on the side of the road. Which I think goes far to explain what we, in America at least, went through much of this past week. Although the news directors at cable television stations, well, they don't have a lot of explaining to do. The ratings went up. End of story. You know? Make Me Look worked. It's just that, you know, in the food business, if you adulterate your product, you have to, I think the Food and Drug Administration has very specific rules for every degree of adulteration. Another word has to go in the name of the thing you make. So meat food product. You see what I'm saying? A meat food product is three times as adulterated as meat. So we are getting news food product at this point. But it's good. Mm-mm, is it good? So attention must be paid, ladies and gentlemen. For example, you thought Billy Mays was dead, the guy that, with the beard that yells. Yes, he is. Long live Billy Mays. According to radioandmusicpros.com, Mark Kay, a morning man in Jacksonville, Florida, is auditioning to become the next Billy Mays. They're holding auditions for the next Billy Mays. Media Enterprises, purveyors of Mighty Putty, Mighty Mendit, the Ding King, Pasta Pro, and Urine Gone, I didn't know, has already held auditions to replace the late Billy Mays. Media Enterprises is casting its net wide. But, of course, I didn't go. So not that wide. Isn't this amazing? See, I could have done that. And yet, no, I couldn't. From the digital wonderland, a listener writes, Dear Harry, every night at 11:15 p.m., well, every night would say that, my digital converter box craps out. What's up with that? Don't tell me I have to now go buy a new one? The thing is only a couple months out of the box. As it is, I'm doing more reading now than ever, but is it time to just throw all of it out the window? Got any idea what's happening with the thing? Do they do something at 11:15 p.m. every night? Is it just reacting to the 11 o'clock news? Answer, it's the digital wonderland, sir. Your task is not to wonder, but to be awed by the wonder. Buried leads for your news diet, ladies and gentlemen. Some gems right at the bottom of the stories. So Tuesday, AP ran a story about Pentagon recruiting last year was the best since 1973. Wow. Get to the bottom of the story. 1 in 4 in the prime recruiting age of 17 to 24 are obese, raising fitness questions compared with 1 in 20 in the 1980s. It's an army of one, but it's the size of 20. Well, the Taliban are going to be scared when they see one of those guys coming at them. Ooh, no, don't shoot me, fatso. And also another buried lead from a story on the journalism website ProPublica. Why Guantanamo detainees ordered released are still stuck there. There are several detainees in Guantanamo who have been ordered released by federal judges. For example, on September 17th, Judge Colleen Collar Cottley ordered the release of Fuad al-Rabia, a Kuwaiti detained at Guantanamo since 2002. She cited, "Oh, just the complete lack of evidence justifying his detention. Kuwait is willing to take al-Rabia back, yet nearly a month later, he's still in Guantanamo with at least 16 other detainees who've likewise been ordered released by a judge. No more than 13 of the detainees ordered released have actually left Guantanamo." The judge found that the government had no grounds to keep holding al-Rabia, a 50-year-old aviation engineer. The judge ruled the evidence against him was, quote, "surprisingly bare," unquote, consisting almost exclusively of confessions that even al-Rabia's own interrogators didn't believe. He was also subjected to abusive techniques, she said. The judge, she. She ordered the government to facilitate his release forthwith. Apparently it's forth without. But the buried lead, way at the bottom of the story, Obama administration officials are worried that even if one of these detainees was not dangerous when he was first detained, Guantanamo itself might have made him so, turning him against the United States. Make friends wherever you go, ladies and gentlemen, and if you can't, make terrorists. The annals of formaldehyde continue to grow here at the top of the news. Select Veal Feeds and owner Wayne Marco have agreed to pay more than $500,000 fine after government officials said his business broke federal laws by sending formaldehyde and another chemical across state lines to farmers raising veal calves, then lied about having done so. The company shipped formaldehyde and potassium permanganate. Mm-mm. Love me my potassium permanganate. To farmers to use with feeding, said the U.S. attorneys. The formaldehyde was to fight scours, which causes diarrhea in the animals, and the potassium permanganate, well, that was produce light-colored meat. You wouldn't want dark-colored veal, would you? No. People who ate the meat were never in danger, said federal and company representatives, although the Food and Drug Administration has not approved the two drugs to be used for veal. See, they have to keep the veal, these people have to keep the veal calves tightly penned. And that's how they, and they're fed a liquid diet, and that's how they get the tendency toward the diarrhea that the formaldehyde cures. It's all a system, ladies and gentlemen. Don't question it. And about 30% of Beijing's malls and supermarkets have an excessively high amount of formaldehyde concentration in the air, posing a potential threat to customers, according to a study released in China. So, don't go there for the Olympics. Oh, sorry. Hello, welcome to the show. Look up in the air, it's a 6-year-old.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to glide in my beautiful balloon? We could float among the stars together, you and I, for we can fly. My beautiful balloon. Love is waiting there in my beautiful balloon, way up in the air in my beautiful balloon. If you'll hold my hand, chase your dream across the sky, for we can fly. Suspended under a twilight canopy, we'll search the clouds for a star to guide us. If by some chance you find yourself loving me, we'll find a cloud to hide us. Keep the moon beside us. So if you'll hold my hand, we'll chase your dream across the sky. For we beautiful balloon. Baby, take me up, up and away. Baby, take me up, up and away. Up, up and away. Baby, take me.
From Leicester Square in London, England, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Yes, London, in fact. Have you ever been to Atlanta? You notice how they have, like, at least six streets named Peachtree in Atlanta? People actually will say, I'll meet you at the corner of Peachtree and Peachtree. But it's Atlanta. The neighborhood where I've been staying the last couple weeks has three streets intersecting and winding around each other, and not just three streets, three names. Lonsdale, Ladbroke, and Lansdowne. There's at least six of each of them. And so that's easy to figure out. And the facility, I'm not going to name it, nor shame it, but the facility from which this broadcast is originating, I was entering in it on Friday to do an interview with another radio show. And I discovered what the weekday routine here is. Because on the weekends, you know, like anywhere else, it's loose, baby. It's very loose. But on the weekdays, there's a whole different thing going on. Because to get into the building, you have to let the guard at the front, right as you get into the front door, before you come upstairs even, you have to let him splooge out of a little bottle some glop, some antibacterial glop for your hands. Now, people who know me know how actually stridently anti-glop I am. It's one of my things. And you have to really go very far to get some glop on me. But I, you know, the guy just was, and I said, I come in all the time. I come in on Sundays, and you're not getting in today. So he glopped me. And I'm sure, you know, it's about the swine flu and everything, but people hear all the time about the nanny state in Great Britain. And it's true, you know, I would root for the party not in power to get in just if they'd promised to take down some 4,000 of the security cameras that are peeping at us. But this is the nanny corporation at work. And it's, you know, it's no different. It's a guy in a uniform telling you got to do it. And finally, about London, the Christmas lights are already up on Regent Street and Oxford Street, among others. Noticed that this past Wednesday, a correspondent to my Twitter feed at LitTwits said they've been up for 3 weeks near him in Australia. So following up our search for the world's most expensive banana, which I think transfixed America a couple of years ago on this broadcast. Now, the earliest Christmas decorations. Your submissions are always welcome. You don't have to be submissive, but, you know, just tell me what they, where they are and when they went up. I'm looking for Labor Day. That's the one I think. Christmas decorations on Labor Day. Won't that be fine? And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Speaking of balloons, this from the Times of London. Storm chasers are used to thunderous reactions. Few would have predicted the raging tempest sweeping across the United States in the wake of Falcon Heaney and the Phantom Balloon Ride. Furious recriminations, though, are underway among America's extreme weather chasers. Douglas Kiesling, the self-proclaimed weather paparazzi from Minneapolis, caught the mood of many storm enthusiasts who feel their reputation has been besmirched by the Heaney family. They are not storm chasers, he said. They're idiots. The Heaneys, of course, have filmed themselves in the eye of a hurricane, as well as other stunts. Kiesling said, the first time I ever heard of them, though, was when people told me to keep an eye out for the show Wife Swap last year. I was told there was a storm-chasing family on it, and they were nuts, unquote. Most other storm chasers, says the Times of London, do not seem to accept that Richard Heaney is a genuine weather expert. Brian Barnes, one of the best-known storm chasers in the U.S., was so inundated with media requests, he placed a disclaimer on his stormchase.com website. Quote, we would like to ask the media to acquire complete facts before making assumptions on the air or speculations about storm chasing or storm chasers. Please be careful when linking this family to actual storm chasers and or scientists who conduct actual peer-reviewed science. Heaney did co-write an article that was published last year in the National Weather Digest. Even this has now been queried. He apparently measured the pressure of a dust devil using a weather watch barometer, said Tony Laubach, a storm chaser from Denver. Not sure exactly what he means by that, but it doesn't sound very scientific to me. He isn't a storm chaser, just a yahoo who took his kids on a hurricane chase, unquote. Another member of the mainstream storm-chasing community in Colorado agreed that Mr. Heaney was not a regular contributor. Scott Hamill said, I'm not even really sure if this guy is a storm chaser, as I'm familiar with or know most of the Colorado chasers, and I've never heard of this dude. Ever. Unquote. Who is this dude? Also, of course, as another writer to my Twitter feed said, didn't anybody in the news departments of any of these stations figure out how much helium it was going to take to lift a 50-pound body of a child? Also from the Times of London, many pieces from the Times of London today, because Rupert's threatening to put it behind a paywall, so I want to steal as much of his stuff as possible before he does that. The British Foreign Secretary is going to appeal a high court ruling that came down this week that secret U.S. intelligence material on the former Guantanamo Bay detainee Binyam Mohammed should be made public. Since his release from Gitmo in February, 31-year-old Mohammed has claimed he was tortured by CIA interrogators while being held in a secret detention center in Morocco. There are apparently seven paragraphs that are in question here. The government was defeated. The material is being withheld until the appeal is heard. The head of MI5, the British intelligence agency, warns it could not have coped with the threat that Al-Qaeda posed to Britain without vital intelligence provided by the U.S. and other foreign agents. The court was told material being released would damage Britain's relationship with the United States. But the justices said there was overwhelming public interest in disclosing the seven paragraphs. As the risk to national security is not a serious one, they said, we should restore the redacted paragraphs. Also, the first attempt to return failed asylum seekers to southern Iraq since the U.S.-led invasion has been a fiasco for the British Home Office. 10 of the 44 Iraqis being forcibly removed from Britain were allowed to enter Iraq. The remaining 34 were flown back to the U.K. along with 99 security guards who escorted them. The 34 are now being held in an immigration removal center near the airport while British Home Office officials figure out what to do next. It's unclear whether they refused to leave the plane when it arrived in the Iraqi capital or were turned back because of problems with their documentation. And finally, from outside the bubble, the U.S. government has acknowledged, this is a story that has been big all week. The French are ticked off because they had some of their soldiers in Afghanistan killed. They then found out that the area where the French soldiers were killed by Taliban insurgents was one recently vacated by Italian troops. And the Italian troops had been paying off the Taliban and had not told the French. So the U.S. government acknowledged now that payment of protection money to the Taliban by the Italian forces was discussed by American officials and their Italian counterparts last year. The official would neither confirm nor deny the form of the discussion. NATO officials have told the Times of London that such a complaint was made by the U.S. in Rome last year. French forces took over the district from the Italian troops, but were unaware of the secret Italian payments. The Times reported a Taliban commander and two senior Afghan officials also said the Italian forces had struck deals to prevent attacks on their troops. Well, we got money. What's the problem? Rome has angrily denied the report. The Berlusconi government has never authorized nor has it allowed any form of payment toward members of the Taliban insurgency, except for the girls. No, they didn't say that. Except for the young girls. They didn't say that. Italy's defense minister says the allegations are absolute rubbish. The spokesman with the Canadian command. I haven't heard of any type of payment that would be done by our troops in order to remain protected. With the number of casualties we've been getting, had we paid these guys, they wouldn't be holding up their end of the bargain. Even though an Afghan army source is quoted as saying Canadian soldiers had made payments to insurgents. So it's everybody but us and the French. Ladies and gentlemen, I say pay them the money. You know? Give them that $2 million check that Dave Letterman wrote. That seems to convince people. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, it's clean, it's cheap, it's safe, it's too clean to meter, it's too cheap to safe. Everybody knows that when the discussion turns to nuclear power, the fingers point approvingly at France. Well, France gets 80% of their power from nuclear power. They figured it all out. They figured it all out. Here's some of the figuring. Work to dismantle a nuclear plant in France, or Prant in France, has been suspended after unexpectedly high levels of plutonium were discovered. The incident has raised concerns about safety and security at the French nuclear sites. Please, they figured it out. Around 22 kilograms of plutonium were found, three times more than expected. France's nuclear watchdog is angry. It was only informed of the discovery last week, 3 months after it was made. Some watchdog. Nice boy. It says there was no risk of a major nuclear accident at the plant near Marseille. The plutonium was dispersed within the facility in several different units known as glove boxes. They weren't stored in the same place, so it seems there were enough safety margins to prevent an accident, says the watchdog. There have been no repercussions from the incident. The latest to cloud the reputation of France's nuclear power industry. The watchdog rated the event as a level 2 on a scale of 7. So, you know, relax. But French Ecology Minister Chantal Jouanou says Tuesday of this week she wants an investigation into reports that some of France's nuclear waste is being stored in open-air pits in Russia. Nobody has been able to confirm or deny this information for me, so there must be an inquiry, Jouanou said. Earlier, a newspaper and a French-German television station reported that about 13% of France's radioactive waste is stored in Siberia. A major French uranium producer denied the suggestion. says uranium is sent to Russia for reprocessing so it could be used again. Same thing they're doing with the same kind of deal, I guess, the Iranians are agreeing to now. But the two news sources said most of the uranium cannot be used again and remains in an open field in Russia. They figured it all out. Send it to Russia. Speaking of which, ladies and gentlemen, when Iran agreed in those talks, those six-party talks a couple of weeks ago, yeah, we'll send most of our low-level uranium, enriched uranium, to Russia for them to enrich for our medical work. Sure, we'll do that. That took a little of the steam out of the scare machine for a while. But it brought back to mind, and now the Wall Street Journal reports that there's pressure on the intelligence agencies in the United States to revisit the 2007 National Intelligence Estimate. You may remember that. That was the one in which all 16 American intelligence agencies agreed that Iran had ended its nuclear weapons program in 2003. And it was hailed at the time as, you know, the new way the intelligence agencies were going to work together, free from political influence. Now, as I say, the Wall Street Journal reports somebody is asking them to revisit it. Political influence? We'll see. But it drew my attention to that year. That year, Iran stopped its nuclear weapons program, supposedly, according to the National Intelligence Estimate, in 2003. What happened in 2003? The United States deposed Iran's chief enemy in the neighborhood, Saddam Hussein. You know, it was the same Saddam Hussein who kept up the bluff of, yeah, well, I'm not going to show that I don't have WMDs. Basically, he revealed later, because it's a dangerous neighborhood and he didn't want Iran to think he was that weak. We thought it was all about us. Iran stopped their nuclear program, according to our own intelligence people, in 2003. It wasn't about us. It's not all about us. But just pay attention to us, will you?
What I feel is like an old freight train, 5 miles long in a pouring rain, rolling out of Detroit, loaded up with shiny cars. And I'm sitting in a Cadillac, smoking on a big cigar. Smoke. You know it's time to pack you a poke.
This is Le Show. And ladies and gentlemen, speaking of attention seekers, you know by now Rush Limbaugh was dropped from the group that is attempting to buy the St. Louis Rams. Rush told the, I shouldn't call him Rush, I've never met the man. Mr. Limbaugh told the Wall Street Journal, as I explained on my radio show, this spectacle is bigger than I am. I find that hard to believe. You don't really mean that, do you, Rush? No, I called him Rush again. Anyway, for some insight on this, I turned to, this just was in my email box this week from a guy named Eric Rhodes, who writes for Radio Inc. And he was explaining to a young 22-year-old, as opposed to an ancient 22-year-old, how to get into the radio business. Like somebody would want to. Now that the buying group he was part of has dropped him, Rush can milk this for another couple of weeks, Eric writes. No matter the outcome, this is great for his show. It acts as a reminder for people to tune in to see what he'll say about it, and it'll bring new listeners and advertisers. It's not unusual to find Rush in the news with some controversy like this a few times a year. It's great for business, and it doesn't happen by accident. You, he's saying to the 22-year-old, don't have the experience, audience, or name to get the media talking about you. Yet every day you see someone get their 15 minutes of fame via YouTube. I cannot advise you about the specifics of what you should do, but the goal is to get noticed, get hired, and hope that some visionary program director will see you and say, this guy has guts. Let's give him a shot. You can be highly targeted, like Rich Marston in Charlotte, who once had himself delivered to a car dealership in a coffin. When they opened the coffin, he was holding a sign that said, I'm dying to get your business. Or you can go national. Your job is to figure out how to create some noise that will work to your benefit. If you can learn that lesson early in your career, you'll be ahead of 85% of all talk hosts. Most of those who are nationally syndicated are there because they're expert at creating buzz over what they've said. They understand how to get people talking. Think of Bob Michael Savage being ousted by the United Kingdom. Actually, he wasn't ousted. He was turned away. Never came in. And I'm here. Eat your heart out, Michael Savage. Oh, sorry. Getting back to the thing. And the subsequent legal battle. Or the White House criticisms of Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, and Rush Limbaugh. These guys are consummate masters of buzz. Make clear what we've been living through here. Anyway, coincidentally, Rush Limbaugh was being interviewed on the Today program earlier this week, the Today Show, and was asked whether Glenn Beck has eclipsed him as the leader of the conservative movement.
Look what I have spawned. Glenn Beck, to me, is right on, Daddy-O. Glenn Beck is a result of my success.
And of his post-nasal drip there, apparently. I'm just a little, you know, it's fine for Rush Limbaugh to take credit for Glenn Beck. Of course, he paved the way. I was a little intrigued by the by just the way he phrased it. It struck me as interesting to hear Rush Limbaugh say,
"Right on, Daddy-O."
What could it possibly mean?
While the beatniks were beating, I was well along with my eating, building up my avoirdupois. Soon the hits I was spinning, and rating books winning, working on my je ne sais quoi. Oh, I was ace and far out, though clearly pre-gout, as I knocked out my top 40 patter. I was wild in the most as I hit the post, acting cool, like it just didn't matter. Getting the chicks, not needing a fix, at the Big 96 on your radio. Every day at dawn, I was way far gone. I was right on, Daddy-O. Oh, you know where that's at. Taking you up to news time. And letting you off. Then Top 40 got cold. They said I was old. And they moved my act to the night side. Yes, the times they had changed. Being hip was deranged. I had to move to the right side. Now I talk all I like to a fake golden mic. And I've got all my party mates fawning. Oh, I'm still ratings king, though I can't hear a thing. Now I keep busy spawning. But every once in a while, through the guff and the guile, my hepcat roots show through. And I'm back playing the hits. My t-shirt still fits. And I'm sending these sounds just to you. Getting the chicks, not needing a fix. At the Big 96 on your radio. Oh, every day at dawn, I was way far gone. I was right on, daddy-o.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
We start out at the top domain level of apologies, I would say. The forward slashes at the beginning of internet addresses have long annoyed internet users, and now the man behind them has apologized for forcing us to use them. Sir Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web, has confessed that the two slashes in a web address were actually unnecessary. Don't we feel like fools? He told the Times newspaper he could easily have designed URLs not to have the forward slashes. There you go. It seemed like a good idea at the time, he said. He admitted that when he devised the web almost 30 years ago, he had no idea that the forward slashes in every web address would cause so much hassle. All right, then. People who haven't been hassled sufficiently to discourage them from using the internet include Meghan McCain, John McCain's daughter. Here's her tweet from this week. So I took a fun picture, not thinking anything about what I was wearing, but apparently anything other than a pantsuit. I am a slut. This is why I've been considering deleting my Twitter account. What was once fun now just seems like a vessel for harassment. I'm going to take some time to think about it, but seriously, I was just trying to be funny with the book and that I'm a dork staying in when I'm alone in my apartment. I wear tank tops and sweatpants. I had no idea this makes me a slut. I can't even tell you how hurt I am. Okay, I'm getting the F off Twitter. Promise not to delete my account until I sleep on it. I do want to apologize to anyone that was offended by my pick. I have clearly made a huge mistake, and I'm sorry to those that are offended. And Rick Sanchez, CNN's House intellectual, tweets an apology, apologizing for using a quote on the air attributed to Rush Limbaugh that Limbaugh never said. He's right, we didn't confirm the quote, our bad. Rick Sanchez's way of apologizing. I told you he was an intellectual. Deadline New York, the head of the Southern Baptist Convention Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission has apologized for comparing democratic health care proposals to Nazi Germany. ERLC President Richard Land reportedly told a Christian Coalition of Florida banquet in Orlando the night before Yom Kippur that democratic leaders advocating reform that would result in the rationing of health care were driven by the same ideology that fueled the Holocaust. I want to put it to you bluntly, what they're attempting to do in healthcare, particularly in treating the elderly, is not something like what the Nazis did. It is precisely what the Nazis did. He went on to bestow an imaginary Dr. Joseph Mengele Award on Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, the president's chief healthcare advisor. The Anti-Defamation League called on Land to apologize. He responded October 14th, saying it was never his intention to equate the Obama administration's healthcare reform proposals with anything related to the Holocaust. Now that I've had the opportunity to personally reflect on my words, I deeply regret the reference to Dr. Joseph Mengele, Land wrote. I was using hyperbole for effect and never intended to actually equate anyone in the Obama administration with Dr. Mengele. I will certainly refrain from making such references in the future. I apologize to anyone, everyone who found such references hurtful. It's the Holocaust Apology of the Week. Famed Irish tenor Ronan Tynan is apologizing for a remark which he insists was not anti-Semitic in New York City. The incident has cost him his singing gig at Yankee Stadium for one of the American League Championship Series. He won't be singing during the seventh inning stretch after the team canceled appearance because of a remark he made in front of a woman looking for an apartment in his East Side building, a remark she took as anti-Semitic. "Anti-Semitism is not in my brain. I have great Jewish friends," Tynan said. It happened Thursday on his floor in the building. A realtor showing an apartment to a customer spoke in jest to Tynan. The realtor said, "At least they're not Red Sox fans." The Irish tenor responded with a remark that he says was ill-placed and misunderstood. "I said, at least they're not Jewish." Tynan said it was in part said in jest to the broker, whom he'd seen 3 weeks before and was referring to a specific incident with customers. He showed it to two Jewish ladies, and they were very particular, Tynan said. "I said that could be scary for them because I would not be the quietest neighbor because I practice and sing." That's what he was thinking about when he said it, but he's sorry. Boston College representatives apologized for organizing a campus dance party that ran late into Saturday night last week, causing dozens of calls to the police. Arkansas guard Courtney Fortson, I guess that's football. It's too early for basketball players to be in the news, isn't it? You'd think. I'd think. Courtney Fortson apologized for, here you go again, sending in an inappropriate message last month via Twitter. "You live and you learn, you move on to better things, so I've put that behind me." He said his teammates were being investigated for sexual assault, so he's sorry about that. Speaking of targets, Target Corporation apologized this week after coming under fire from customers and some Hispanic groups for selling an illegal alien Halloween costume on its website. The $39.99 costume comes with a space alien mask, an orange jail suit with illegal alien stamped on the chest, and a large green card. The Minneapolis retailer said the costume was added to its website by mistake and said it would be removed. "It's insensitive. It's offensive," says Vicki Adams, a California media relations consultant who complained to Target after learning about the costume on a Facebook site. With a letter to the editorial board of the Xinhua news agency, Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao proves himself a paragon of scientific rigor. In his short note, the premier apologized for a mistake in a speech whose full transcript was published by the news agency and reprinted by newspapers across the country. The letter, written vertically in traditional brush calligraphy, reads, "In my article, Teachers Are the Pillars of Our Education," which was published yesterday, "the categories of petrology ought to be, quote, sedimentary, igneous, and metamorphic. I wish to make this correction to express my apologies to all readers." That's the apology from the premier of China. For perspective, I offer you the words of President Obama at the lightly covered by news media because they were busy with the balloon boy appearance in New Orleans this week.
"Good to be back in the Crescent City. It's always an inspiration to spend time with men and women who have reminded the rest of America what it means to persevere in the face of tragedy, to rebuild in the face of ruin. Katrina may have swept through the city, but it did not destroy this community, and that is because of you, the people of New Orleans. It has now been just over 4 years since that terrible storm struck your shores. And the days after it did, this nation and all the world bore witness to the fact that the damage from Katrina was not caused just by a disaster of nature, but also by a breakdown of government. The government wasn't adequately prepared, and we didn't adequately respond. So when I took office as president, one of the first things I did was tell my cabinet and senior staff that our Gulf Coast rebuilding efforts and our disaster response efforts were going to be top priorities for this White House. I wanted to get it right, and I wanted us to be ready. And so far, I'm pleased to report that we've made good progress."
He even used the same words that George W. Bush used to use, good progress. Didn't get it right. Katrina's didn't sweep through New Orleans, didn't strike its shores. As listeners to this program know, New Orleans was struck by the catastrophic failure of the levees and flood walls built by the Army Corps of Engineers. He wanted to make sure his administration gets it right, ladies and gentlemen. Chinese premier apologizes for getting the elements of petrology wrong. You see what I'm saying? U.S. soft drink giant PepsiCo has apologized for a free iPhone application crafted to help men seduce women and keep records of conquests. Miss Hampton University apologized one day after writing a letter to President Obama that said her crowning was not widely accepted on the campus because she is not black. Representative Ike Skelton has apologized to another congressman for an R-rated barb over hate crimes legislation. And Bill Walton returned to Portland, apologizing for the way he acted when he was a trailblazer. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You noticed, perhaps, that one thing that did go sky high this week, not the balloon boy, but the profits at Goldman Sachs and the bonuses being paid by Goldman Sachs to their employees. Not much to say about that, except...
When Mr. Goldman, they hit Mr. Sachs. Business ran on railroad tracks. The world was simpler, you can't forget. When Messrs. Sachs and Goldman met. Said Mr. Goldman, for years and years, our guys have got the most between the ears. Said Mr. Sachs, let's unhook the reins and find new ways to profit off our traders' brains.
insulted Mr. Goldman to Mr. Sachs.
Mr. Sachs complained that we're injured by AIG. Mr. Goldman responded, that's fine with me. Our risky bets will be paid off in full, said Mr. Goldman, more than ever, a raging bull. Unemployment is rising, Mr. Goldman observes, while their partnership is still thriving on nerve. Profits in the billions, ignore the attacks, says a flush.
And if that was for sale on iTunes, I assure you that every dollar going to that would not go to Goldman Sachs. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen.
All right, just a couple of moments. Swiss researchers have found that alpine glaciers melting under the impact of climate change are releasing highly toxic pollutants that had been absorbed by the ice for decades. They warned in a study abstract published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology that it could have a dire environmental impact on pristine mountain areas as global warming accelerates. Much of the pollution was dumped on Europe's biggest mountain range by atmospheric currents from further afield, according to the researchers. Their study of layers of sediment revealed sharp buildups of now banned chemical compounds from industry and farming, including dioxins and pesticides like DDT. We can confirm with the help of these layers that in the 1960s and 70s, a lot of these persistent organic pollutants were produced in great quantities and were deposited in this alpine lake. But accelerated glacier melting due to global warming may account for enhanced release of legacy organic pollutants at historically high levels. That's a nice way of putting it, legacy organic pollutants. It's a legacy, ladies and gentlemen. Ain't it? News of the Warm, award-winning, and a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And it's in the world of magic, it's called misdirection. Watch this hand, the other hand does something else. So while we're reading about the Pakistani military's offensive in Waziristan, the High Court in Pakistan has dismissed terrorism charges against the leader of Lashkar-e-Taiba, Hafiz Saeed. That's the group that planned the attacks in Mumbai, India, last year. He's released. You can go hang out with AQ Khan. Misdirection. There's a pageant you'll never see. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free download for members of www.audible.com/theshow. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. Abby, just like being able to tell peach tree from peach tree, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Address for this broadcast and the list of music heard hereon, just some of the great stuff available for you at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks as always to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Adrian Bodenham at this unnamed facility here. I hope he has glop on his hands. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Isn't that right, Rush?
Right on, Daddy-O.
Thank you.